people? What up? What up? It's your man, D Real, the Black Panther, stalking the urban jungle with Vibranium Adidas. I come to you this afternoon excited because this is probably going to be one of my favorite shows ever. Black superheroes. There was a time in history when you could not even say those two words together in the same sentence. Let's just give you a real brief history of the comic book. Been around roughly about, in one form or another, for say about 100 years. Call me a comic book historian. I am, unofficially, but I know more than most people do. Enter 1936. Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster. Breakout with Action Comics number one, and the superhero is literally born. After Superman, you had Batman, and then you had Captain America, and then you had Wonder Woman, and then there was a plethora of superheroes that followed. So throughout the 30s and 40s, comic books explode in popularity. But guess what? Ain't nobody in a comic book that look like us. And when I say us, I mean black people. I mean Negroes. I mean people of color. And when they were in a comic book, they were relegated to the role of sidekick, some sort of foppish fool, or some savage man-eating cannibals that dwelt in jungle regions where somehow they lived all their life, but then people like Tarzan was only there for a week and knew more about the jungle than people who lived there all their lives. Okay, I promise I'm not going to get grim and dark. It wasn't until 30-plus years after the inception of the concept of the superhero was there a superhero of color. That brings you up to where you need to be. I will get into particulars here in a second. 646-668-2268. I am here. I am on. I'm going to be talking for the next hour. I'm going to be nerding the heck out heavily. If you are allergic to nerd stuff, I strongly suggest you stop listening or watching now, because it's about to get serious. Where was I? 60s. Oh, something happened in the 50s that tremendously affected the comic book industry. A psychologist specifically by the name of Frederick Wortham wrote a book called The Seduction of the Innocent. And in this book, he basically made comic books of all types, and particularly comic books with superheroes in it, sound as if it were the cause of the creation of juvenile delinquency, and even up to and including a certain point that anybody who read a comic book was a communist, at least in the form they were in. So comic book superheroes got neutered in a major way. Wonder Woman got married. Superman got married. Batman, I don't know what the hell happened to Batman, but he wasn't the Batman we all grew to know and love. Anyway, DC came out with a reboot of classic superheroes, Green Lanterns, Flashes, that sort of thing, and that was successful. Put them all together, called them the Justice League. They were successful. The story goes, one day, the president of DC Comics and the president of Marvel were sitting around having a conversation, and DC started bragging about how dope their line was. Suddenly, enter your man Stan Lee, and for the most part, and for the better part of about, what, 50 or so years, put out the best comic stuff there possibly ever could have been. DC kind of caught up, sort of, but not quite. That's the what. The why. Why black superheroes? Why do we need black superheroes? Why are there black superheroes? First of all, a hero in general, super or otherwise, is meant to inspire, is meant to give one a sense of pride about who they are and what they are. If there are no black superheroes, then we are made to feel as if being black is not something we should be proud of. I was influenced heavily, as y'all may well know, that when I open up my show, I refer to myself as the Black Panther stalking the Arab jungle. I submit to you, ladies and gentle people. Oh, and for those of you who didn't know, I'm just a wee bit of a comic book collector. I might have one or two. Fantastic Four, number 52, is a comic book that changed the way everybody, including myself, looked at comic books. Fantastic Four number 52, which came out in 1966, was the debut of, if you are looking on Facebook, you can see that. That is my grail. Fantastic Four 52 is the first appearance of that guy, the Black Panther. What was so cool about the Black Panther? Everything. He was black. He was the king of one of the most technologically advanced societies on the planet. And he single-handedly beat up the Fantastic Four. Single-handedly. Bear in mind, Black Panther is not like Superman strong. He used his wits. He used technology. I mean, and if you're going to be perfectly honest, if you want to overcome the man... See what I did there? You've got to use your wits. You've got to have your wits. And that's precisely what he did because he wanted to see if he was tough enough to take on this other guy. The Black Panther actually precedes the inception of the organization, the Black Panther Party. So Stan Lee actually thought about Black Panthers and stuff before there were actually Black Panthers. Anyway, the Black Panther was the first real black superhero. But we didn't start to feel pride about black superheroes with the Black Panther. I mean, the way you really like, that's my boy. Don't get me wrong. I love the Black Panther. And anybody who knows me knows I love the Black Panther. But the Black Panther was an African, not an African American. Make sense? So there's still that thing where, and you got to give it to Stan Lee. Stan Lee has some big king size beach ball nuts to come out with a black character at the height of the civil rights struggle. Big up to you. And a lot of people who don't understand the analogy of the X-Men. And Magneto and Professor X, that their theologies of we need to dwell amongst them and we need to dwell separate from them and be prepared to deal with them when they come at us is a direct adaptation of the philosophies of Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King. Passive aggressive. Exist in harmony. Exist by any means necessary. Anyway. That being said, we didn't get our first real black superhero until 1969 in the form of that guy right there, the Falcon. Sam Wilson was a small-time crook that ended up with the good fortune of hanging out with Captain America. And Captain America trained him, and Captain America trained him to fight and become his partner. So that's cool, but at the same time, you could still see where the pride hadn't really kicked in the way we were hoping for it to kick in, because we're thinking, okay, yeah, he's a brother, but he's like, he's Captain America's sidekick. And it wasn't like, and there have been dozens of comic books where Sam Wilson will tell you, okay, I'm not even going to do nothing with you unless you treat me like your partner, because my name ain't Bucky and I'm not getting ready to roll like that, like a brother would. But at the same time, he was relegated to a, I think I got one right here. He was relegated to the role of what I like to call and. See that? Captain America honored him by letting him, well, not Captain America, but the publishers of Marvel Comics honored him by allowing him to share billing with Captain America for about, I'd say a decade or two, where the comic book was called Captain America and the Falcon. Also, this particular issue that I'm holding in my hand, Captain America 171, was the first appearance of the Falcon with wings. Looky there. And who's responsible for giving him those wings? Yep, you guessed it. The advanced technology of Wakanda and the Black Panther. I don't know why they changed that in the movie. It could have been like that in the movie. Why couldn't Falcon get his wings from Black Panther? But speaking of Black Panther, for those of us that don't know, Black Panther's getting ready to change the game. He's getting ready to change the way you look at superhero movies. I ain't even gonna go there. I'm gonna get back to where I was at. We did not have a superhero that we could call Made in America. Does that make sense? Enter that guy. Luke Cage, Power Man, steel hard skin, ugly yellow shirt. But we loved him all the same. Luke Cage came at a time when, I might be dating myself when I say this, but there was a movie era that was coined blaxploitation. Blaxploitation movies were movies that were a source of pride and were at the same time a source of disgust, because black people didn't put blaxploitation movies out, not the large, some of them, Jewish people. And they showed the ugly, ugly, ugly side of our culture. Luke Cage was born of that. The early stories that Luke Cage was in, you could see that a lot of what went on in his comics was snatched directly from the blaxploitation era. There was nobody, and this is something to take note of too, there are black characters out there. You got Black Lightning. You had John Stewart, the Black Green Lantern. You had Cyborg. Okay, there were a number of black characters that came out in the 70s and the 80s. Crazy thing about it, there were no black people, no black artists, no black writers making these stories about these wonderful black characters. Strange, huh? How can you write about my culture when you know absolutely nothing about it? Don't know. But they decided it was a pretty good idea, and they did it clear up until about the late 80s. Enter a gentleman by the name of Dwayne McDuffie. Dwayne McDuffie is no longer with us. I think he passed away in 2002, 2003, something like that. But anyway, Dwayne McDuffie, a brother, got the idea to create a line of comics for us. And it was a line of comic books that was bankrolled by DC, keep that in mind as I tell this story. It was bankrolled by DC. Him and a couple of his homies got together. They put together these characters, and they decided they was going to pitch it at DC because, of course, they didn't have the money to put out no comic book company. So they pitched the idea to DC. DC loved it. They put it on. It was called Milestone. Anybody who was reading comics in the early 90s knows about Milestone. Milestone is where you got the characters Icon and Rocket, Hardware, and, of course, the most popular one, Static Shock. They also had a team called the Blood Syndicate. And just like the name sounds, yep, they were a gang, but they were a gang of superheroes. Not only were they black, they were also Asian and Latino characters that were written into the Blood Syndicate. Some of them were even gay and lesbian. So Milestone was diversifying before diversification was even a thing. Milestone had a pretty good run between 1992 and like 96, 97. As we do in our culture, we don't like to be bossed or told what to do. I am not 100% sure if it's the truth or not, but the artists at Milestone wanted to depict an issue of, I believe it was Static Shock, an issue of Static Shock where he was getting ready to have sex with his girlfriend. And he was getting ready to have sex. He had a condom and all of that. He was practicing safe sex, all of that. I don't know if you remember back in the 90s, they was talking about, you know, put a condom on it if you're going to do it, you know, get a test for AIDS, blah, 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 all of that. And somebody at DC didn't like it. Matter of fact, I think it was the president at the time. I think it was a cat named Paul Levitz. Again, another Jewish guy. And he didn't want that to go out. Folks at Milestone was like, bump that. Y'all gave us creative control. We want to be able to do what we want to do the way we want to do it. And somehow, mystically, magically, that issue ran. I'm still looking for it. I want to find it. And it went down exactly the way it was supposed to. They didn't want a condom on the cover. A condom wound up on the cover, got a lot of flack for it. And at that point, DC felt like Milestone is biting the hand that feeds them. So they was like, we ain't going to cut it, but we ain't going to do nothing to help it grow either. And around late 90s, Milestone Comics folded. They had some fantastic characters too, man. I mean, Hardware was basically a black version of Iron Man. He was a, you know, exec. He came up with his own armor, and he was fighting corruption, you know, in the company that he worked at because the dude he worked for was corrupt and foul or whatever. Icon was the equivalent. I mean, literally, he was a black Superman, and he came to Earth same way from another planet, and he took the form of the first being he came in contact with, which happened to be a black slave. So he had been on the Earth since the 19th century, 1850s, and for some strange reason, Icon was kind of one of those stuffy brothers who eat mayonnaise and vote Republican. I mean, it is what it is. But the man was Icon. So what could we say? And his sidekick Rocket, who was like a teenage girl, she had a problem with a lot of his philosophies. She was straight calling corny. You know, she'd say things, you know, we don't think like that no more. Real black people don't do stuff like that, you know. And that's what made the comic good, because there was always this banter between Icon and Rocket about real black versus fake black, you know? And here's this guy who can literally lift mountains with his bare hands, but he don't know what it means to be black, or chooses not to because he's been alive for like 100-plus years. Anyways, Icon and Rocket, they had a pretty good run, and it ended up folding, you know, right along with Milestone, everything Milestone did around the late 90s. Todd McFarlane, anybody remember that name? Todd McFarlane is the man who was responsible for the creation of another black character, Spawn. Nobody knows who Spawn is. Okay, I give you a brief history. Spawn was basically a CIA operative that went around murking people who needed to be murked, like CIA operatives usually do. His boss double-crossed him, and he literally died. He died. He died, and he went to hell, as somebody who makes a living killing people all the time probably would. And he made a deal with the devil to lead his army of hell and burn the gates of heaven down or whatever, but he had to let him see his wife first. And like we know, when you make a deal with the devil, he'll give you what you want, but not the way you wanted it. He let Spawn come back like 5 years after he died. His wife has already moved on, married his best friend, and had a baby with him. There, I let you see her. Now, leave my army. As one might imagine, when you give somebody a raw deal like that, they're going to respond to that raw deal by giving you the middle finger, which is what he did. Basically, Spawn's a cat who can do anything and everything that he can think of with these supernatural powers that he has. But at the time, in the early 90s, when Spawn first came out, his powers were finite. And each time he performed some kind of superhuman feat, he would lose some of that power. And then when he finally depleted that power, he would die and go back to hell. So Devil had a failsafe, was ready for it if he decided he was going to go left, which he did. And then there was this whole great big adventure about Spawn where he, you know, had this hell quest and ended up, long story short, he came back. Spawn comics are still being published to this very day. Spawn's cool, but again, we have that dynamic going on where the protagonist is indeed black. But I mean, if you look at Spawn, you wouldn't know because he came back with his face all burnt up and he's looking nasty and freaky looking and had this weird outfit on. But regardless, it's not a black character by a black artist. You see what I'm saying? And those seem to be the ones that carry more gravitas with us. Those seem to be the ones that resonate with us. In the late 90s, Dennis Cohen, one of the guys who helped to start Milestone, along with Reginald Hudlin. Anybody who does not know who Reginald Hudlin is, think about the first House Party movie. He directed it. And if you can't remember exactly who he was the guy that was trying to break in the house and the dog came after him and he ran and got on the bus and he left his shoe and he sat down and he only had one shoe on. Anyway, that's for you folks that was really paying attention during House Party. If you don't remember, you don't remember. 646-668-2268. We are talking about black superheroes. Anyway, Reginald Hudlin and Dennis Cohen got together and they started writing and drawing chores on the Black Panther. Their whole idea, their whole thought process was this. How is it that a character like the Black Panther, who has access to technology nobody on earth has. His fighting skills are the equivalent, if not superior, to Captain America's. He's got more money than Tony Stark and could probably, if he decided to strategize, find a way to beat up both of them. So the Black Panther was reborn as the character he deserved to be, a force to be reckoned with in the Marvel Universe. One of the first storylines that that was examined in this revamp of the Black Panther was that the Black Panther did not join the Avengers to be their pal. He actually joined the Avengers to observe them, or some might even speculate, to spy on them, to make sure that they did not become a threat to Wakanda, because ultimately, for the Black Panther, everything is about Wakanda. And he made no bones about it, but the shape that the Black Panther took in the late 90s and the early 2000s is the Black Panther that you will essentially be seeing in the movie. A Black Panther who's running things, a Black Panther who's handling his business, a Black Panther who does not need Americans or America to get things done. That's somebody that I think African Americans in general could look up to, because that's everybody's dream. I want to be able to do what I want to do whenever I want to do it, the way I want to do it, without having to deal with the man. As a matter of fact, during his run, he got married. And looky there, who he married. Yes, that's right, another iconic Black superhero, or should I say superheroine? Oh, you thought I was going to miss her. You thought I wasn't going to mention her. You thought I wasn't going to mention her. Surprise! Storm. Yes. Storm came at a time, right around the time, like maybe like 74. They were revamping the X-Men because the original five were boring. And that's when you got characters like Colossus and Wolverine and Nightcrawler. And Storm was among them. Storm, what was so unique about her was she has the ability to manipulate and control. Manipulate, control, same thing. The weather. Affect weather patterns or create her own weather patterns. That's a bomb power when you think about it. I could create a rain cloud in the middle of your bedroom. I can strike you with lightning. I can make lightning come out of my fingertips. I can use wind to fly. That's a pretty dope power. Before she became a member of the X-Men, she was worshipped in the region of Africa that she lived in as a goddess. Why wouldn't she be? And she established herself as probably one of the most popular female superheroes that Marvel has. One of your favorites, Miss Scott. Why wouldn't she be? She, again, heroes are a source of pride. Just as a source of pride, my daughter has a picture of Storm in her bedroom. Why? Because I put it there. I want her to know there are superheroes who look like her. I want her to know that superheroes aren't just Superman. Superheroes aren't just Wonder Woman. Superheroes aren't just Batman. Superheroes are people who look like you. Source of pride. I can't say it enough. There are tons of characters out there in lesser capacities that aren't as popular as some of these characters that I mentioned. Like, for instance, this comic book may not look like much. DC Comics presents. It's not the cover, but what was inside. It was the debut of that guy right there, Cyborg. Cyborg is enjoying a lot of popularity currently because he's occurring in, yeah, Fatality's very cool, but she's a bad guy. Anyway, and technically she's an alien, but so is Icon. I guess it all depends on how the character is presented. Anyway, Cyborg came out late 70s, early 80s, when the Teen Titans were being revamped. Because originally, the Teen Titans were, they were just the sidekicks of main characters, like Wonder Girl, Robin, Kid Flash, that kind of a thing. And they decided to revamp the Teen Titans by putting some characters in there who weren't just the sidekicks of major heroes. And Cyborg was one of those characters that got put into the mix. I don't know if it was because Cyborg was the only black character in the Teen Titans at the time, or if it was just people were feeling him. He was very popular. He took off. And in some way, shape, or form, Cyborg was always associated with the Teen Titans through the 90s. But in the early 2000s, when DC was restructuring their universe, as they always do, like every other year, Cyborg was written into the Justice League. And Cyborg became more or less a founding member of the Justice League. That kind of stuck. So there have been animated movies about the Justice League where Cyborg is a member. And in the recent Middle of the Road Justice League movie, Cyborg is a member of the group there as well. Probably the most popular iteration of Cyborg in current media was the Teen Titans cartoon. When there's trouble, you know who to call. Teen Titans! Which was actually a very good iteration of the characters. And Cyborg was pretty popular. That's when he coined his catchphrase, Booyah. And he actually said it in the movie, but he didn't say it like he says it on the cartoon. So it was kind of like, I'm kind of feeling it, but I'm not. Cyborg is voiced by an African-American, Kari Payton. If you guys do not know who that is, you can catch an episode of The Walking Dead, and he plays the role of King Ezekiel, yet another black character in a comic book. Comics are becoming more and more diversified, I think because they don't have a choice, because society is becoming more and more diversified. The most recent iterations of Marvel characters, Marvel just recently restructured their universe. Let me see. I think I got it right here. Looky there. All new, all different, Captain America. That, by the way, happens to be Sam Wilson, the Falcon. Yes, the Falcon is a Captain America, because now you got like two or three Captain Americas running around. Captain America is the head of Hydra and a Nazi now, the original Captain America. I don't know whose idea that was to come up with that idea, but I guess Sam Wilson Captain America represents not having the connections that Captain America had. With Captain America, he always had access to S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff and all of that, that kind of S.H.I.E.L.D. tech and S.H.I.E.L.D. travel and access to that. But Sam Wilson, Captain America, he got to take commercial flights to get where he needs to go. I mean, he can fly, right? But he can't fly intercontinentally. Iron Man, Tony Stark, for some reason or another, is now an artificial intelligence, and he assists 15-year-old Riri Williams, who happens to be an MIT graduate and the new Iron Man, or should I say, as she calls herself now, Iron Heart.
So a lot of diversity. Iron Man is a black female. Captain America is a black male. Diversification. Yay, we like that. Some things I didn't like during the Civil War storyline that ran through comics, Storm and the Black Panther ended up getting a divorce. I didn't like that. Why do we have to depict, you know, probably who had become at the time Marvel's premier couple, and you just broke them up for really no good reason? Black Panther's an Avenger, Storm's an X-Man, so they're diametrically opposed when they're having this Avengers versus X-Men type thing. I don't even know what to say about that. I'm at a loss. That just seems like that was purposeful sabotage of what could have been like a Superman and Lois Lane type thing where they're just synonymous. I mean, because he's the black superhero, she's the black superheroine, it makes sense for them to be together. In the current Black Panther comic book, yet another reboot, this is actually a pretty good story. It's written by Ta-Nehisi Coates. He delves more into the Wakandan aspect, and even though Wakanda is a technologically advanced society, there's still a lot of unrest. There's still a lot of inequality. A lot of Wakanda's neighbors don't like them, so they're warring factions. Very realistic. I mean, that's a realistic approach to take, and that's a story that needs to be addressed. It's us. It's black people, the entire gamut. I mean, there have been comic books of Icon that address teen pregnancy. There have been issues of Black Panther that talk about drug use, drug abuse, real issues, stuff that we as a people deal with. And so I think that is the reason why it is monumentally important that black comic book characters be illustrated by black people, or somebody who understands the black experience and can write these stories in a way that create a rapport between character and reader. In the 60s, the Black Panther resonated with people because that's where we were. You know, Black Panther, Black Panthers. He's doing his thing. And I mean, there was a point in time during Black Panther's run in the 70s where he actually ran up against the Ku Klux Klan. Who wouldn't want, again, that was a story that was written by Dennis Cohen. Who wouldn't want to see the Black Panther beating the crap out of the Ku Klux Klan? That's a story that resonates. I'm feeling that. When I went and I remember having those comic books like back in like the 80s, late 70s, early 80s, and buying those comic books and reading Black Panther versus the Ku Klux Klan. Oh, this is gonna be dope! You know, and it was. I mean, there was one point during the story where they overwhelmed the Black Panther, knocked him unconscious, and tied him to a burning cross. He got off of it. He broke what? You know, he's the Black Panther. He's going to handle that. You know, and then there's stories, like I said, where someone brought – and it was during, like, the late 80s when crack was prevalent. Wakanda was not safe from drugs. I mean, they called it something else in the comics, but it was a metaphor for crack, you know, and T'Challa was outraged because he's like, how did this get in the kingdom? And it's like, okay, everybody don't have the same philosophy about Wakanda as you do. You know, you done had civil unrest, all this foolishness, issues. My whole point is it was issues. It was real issues, issues that we could identify with. Nobody identified with, you know, I mean, I think the only other character in comics that I really could identify with and that resonated with me was Peter Parker, Spider-Man, because he had real issues. He had real problems. He's like, I'm going to pay my rent. Is this girl going to go out with me? I need to get books and tuition. Oh, my auntie's sick. That's real stuff. You know what I'm saying? Make Spider-Man black, and he'd have been in there like swimwear. Oh, wait a minute. They did make Spider-Man black. Look at that. Awesome. This was like, I want to say mid-2000s. Miles Morales. A Puerto Rican man, teenager actually. There was an Ultimate line of comics that Marvel had, and it was a different take on mainstream characters, and folks was getting shot, folks was getting killed. Long story short, he gained Spider-Man powers and took over as Spider-Man when the Peter Parker of that universe was killed. That universe ended up being destroyed, but Miles Morales came over to our universe. Miss Scott, you don't remember a black Spider-Man. Were you reading comic books in the early to mid-2000s? That is when Miles Morales made his debut. He had the same powers as the other Spider-Man, but in addition to that, he also had the ability to bend light. Camouflage himself, and he had a one of those like bioelectric venom blast type things. But there was a lot of controversy, I remember, because he came out around the time that the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie came out, or just a little bit before, and people were clamoring, let's have a Miles Morales Spider-Man, let's have a Miles Morales Spider-Man. But as y'all know, that diversity thing is coming, but it comes hard. And people did not want to see their Spider-Man diluted or changed. A little piece of trivia that you may not know, Donald Glover in Spider-Man Homecoming plays a character who is the uncle of Miles Morales. So, might be seeing a Miles Morales, might not. Who knows? And there have been African American versions of mainstream characters. Like for instance, Black Superman. Yeah, his name is Calvin Ellis, and that Superman, when he's not being Superman, is, wait for it, the President of the United States on Earth 23, not mainstream Earth. That was during the New 52. That was a reboot like late 2000s where DC, yet again, rebooted their universe and made a whole new plethora cast of characters, and that was one of the characters. There's also another black Superman. There are a couple of black Supermans. Cool. There's a black Superman that is related to General Zod. Yes, that bad guy, General Zod. But he is like the direct opposite of General Zod. He's like a pacifist. So much so to the point where sometimes it's hard to get him to fight. But when he does fight, you know what I'm saying, he's knocking bark out of folks behind. But you got your Black Panthers. You got your Luke Cages. You have to be under a rock if you haven't seen the popularity of Luke Cage. You know, the Netflix special, that just put Luke Cage in your living room. I mean, those of us who've been reading comic books all our lives, it was just a genuine treat to see Luke Cage, and they even paid homage to the metal tiara and ugly yellow shirt. If you haven't seen it, go watch the Luke Cage Netflix series. it's worth it. It gets kind of corny towards the end, but for the most part, a decent representation because, again, there was input by people of color. So I think that more than anything else made that series credible, enjoyable. 646-668-2268. If you got a question you want to ask me about anything I've been talking about, if you want to interject something that you think garners mentioning, I know I have not mentioned every single black superhero there is. There are quite a few that I have not mentioned. I could just start naming off names. I could say Blue Marvel. I could say Vixen. I could say Misty Knight. I could say White Tiger. I mean, on and on. I think I mentioned Black Lightning in passing. There are literally tons of black superheroes, but I guess I kind of got to draw the line when a black superhero does not resonate with me. And what I mean resonate, okay, cool, you got a black character. But what is that black character doing? What does that black character mean? What does that black character stand behind? What does he represent? It was revealed, and this is a story, an issue, a series that I strongly suggest people who read comic books and people who don't read comic books alike. It was a story called The Truth, and Red, White, and Black, The Truth, Red, White, and Black. And essentially, that was a story that said the experiments that were being done on black GIs was actually black GIs being test subjects for the super soldier serum that they actually ended up giving to Steve Rogers and made him Captain America. So they had been testing it, and it wasn't working, and it was disfiguring people and making people lose their mind and that kind of thing. So I thought that was really cool that they took those experiments and turned them into something that you could put into comics. The black Captain America, the first black Captain America, ended up having kids, and his kids ended up inheriting that super soldier gene, that kind of a thing. So, and the funny thing about it was Captain America never knew, you know, which makes sense. How could you come up with a formula that gives somebody super speed, agility, and all that kind of stuff and not have tested it? Okay? That's probably not a story that resonated with white people. But that story really resonated with me. I was like, yeah, they do it in real life, so why don't they just do it in comics? I mean, and it was actually a really, really good read. It was a one shot. It was like a 6-issue miniseries, but it covered, you know, the time between World War II and the present day, and it was just a very cool read. That guy, Steel. Yeah, I've got an autographed issue one of Steel. Yeah. Strangely enough, this is not the first appearance of Steel. The first appearance of Steel was in a Superman comic book when everybody thought Superman was dead. Remember that? Death of Superman back in the 90s. Steel took over as one of four Supermen. And basically, Steel was just like a black Superman slash Iron Man, kind of wore a suit of armor and carried a hammer. He wore a suit of armor and carried a hammer. And his name was John Henry Irons. I do not think anybody black wrote that. Because it probably would have been done more tastefully. Be that as it may, still was a character that gained some popularity during the 90s, so much to the point that they made a horrible live-action movie about it featuring Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq Diesel as a superhero. Yeah, I wasn't feeling that movie. Anyway, in closing, black superheroes. If there were not black superheroes, we would have to continue idolizing other characters. I think what got me into comics in the first place was reading a lot of Greek and Norse mythology as a younger child, and to find out, you know, these characters are performing superhuman feats, and a lot of what was depicted in Greek mythology is what inspired people to make comic books in the first place. Comic books were based hugely in sci-fi. Sci-fi gave way to these fantastic, I mean, and superheroes, if you think about it, in and of themselves, are science fiction, which gave way to the superhero, which gave way to the questioning. I mean, and that's what happened with me. A lot of it was questions. I mean, my first exposure to comic books was through my older brother. My older brother used to collect comic books, and he was more into martial arts than he was into superheroes. He liked superheroes too, but he's more into the martial arts thing. And I always used to ask, you know, where's the black dudes? You know, where the brothers at? And he had a couple Luke Cage comic books. And I think he had like one or two Richard Dragon, the DC character, Richard Dragon, Kung Fu Fighter. And there was a character in the Richard Dragon comic books named Bronze Tiger. And Bronze Tiger was a brother. And he's supposed to be, you know, one of the second or third nicest dudes in martial arts in the whole DC universe. But you very rarely even hear about him. But that got me into, you know, looking at comics and learning and growing in them. But I continued to always ask the questions. And my exposure to the Black Panther was after the Black Panther's inception. Black Panther came out in 66. I didn't see or was never exposed to the Black Panther until like the early 70s, like 71, 72, when he was, you know, a member of the Avengers, and then he got his own series. He had a series that was drawn by Dwayne Turner, a brother, and Don McGregor, another brother. And that, that storyline was amazing. And that was the storyline that introduced us to Killmonger, who you will also see in the Black Panther movie, played by Michael B. Jordan. I hope he does a good job, because Killmonger's a beast in the comics. We need them. We need them for the same reason that well, for one, I want to say, athletes are role models, but that isn't an athlete's responsibility to be a role model. You feel me? Athletes are role models in a sense, but I mean, I'm a big old nerd at heart, and even though I like sports and I like athletes and I like watching basketball and I like watching football, superheroes have always been the characters that I looked up to, that I thought to myself, what would T'Challa do in this situation? How would Luke Cage respond if somebody took his Jell-O off of his plate in a lunchroom? That kind of stuff, you know? They were a source of pride. I mean, just to pick up a comic book and see somebody who looks like you, that behaves like you. I mean, I had issues with Luke Cage and the Sweet Christmas thing. You know what I'm saying? I guess that was their way of making him cuss. And in the 70s, you know, you had the comics code, so comics was like crazy censored. So there was a lot of stuff you couldn't say and couldn't do. But I just, a lot of his speech I found crazy fake, you know, and that's what led me to believe that's not a black person writing this story. This story sounds really wide, you know, and then I learned, you know, it was George Tuska. And I like George Tuska's work. George Tuska, a white guy. He did work on Daredevil and a couple of other things. But he had, like, really cool action sequences. You know, he was from the Jack Kirby school of illustrating, you know, had the big fist coming out like that real close at you. And, you know, the dimensions of the body looked off, but it depicted action really cool. Anyway, I have had fun nerding out with y'all, nerding out with you, Miss Scott, since you're the only one that was again, you are a superhero yourself because you're the only one brave enough to have an opinion. Nobody else has an opinion. I'm at the 2-minute warning mark. I was supposed to be closing 3 minutes ago, but I promise this time I'm actually closing. If you do not know anything at all about black superheroes, go to the movies in February and watch Black Panther. It is directed and scripted by a black man, Ryan Coogler. He is responsible for the movie Creed with Michael B. Jordan. He must like Michael B. Jordan. He's also responsible for the movie Fruitvale Station. That's a movie that's going to make you very angry. Based on a true story, but I don't want to get bitter, so I'm not going to talk a whole lot about Fruitvale Station. I think the depiction of us on the screen in a Marvel feature film is going to be very well done. I look forward to it. I look forward to the source of pride. Man, I'm thinking about doing a live feed from the Black Panther movie because I'm going to have my gear. Y'all just don't know. I'm going to be so clean. Anyway, this has been Be Real with D Real for December 7th, 2017. That was your discussion on Black Superheroes. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was inspirational and educational. I will get at y'all next week with another interesting topic. Bye, Miss Scott. Peace, y'all.